This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, there was dramatic development in the United States over the weekend when, at last, after much trouble and stress and lobbying, the House of Representatives approved a package of aid worth over $90 billion. $61 billion of that is for Ukraine, who really desperately need it because the Russians have been making advances. That invasion of Ukraine by Russia has entered its third year. There are also aid packages for Taiwan, and it is very important. The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has been desperately pleading for this package. He needs, in particular, air defense missiles, and the Russians have made significant gains. Europe also is preparing and lobbying to enhance its support for the Ukrainians. And just before we started this podcast in London, Rishi Sunak announced that they were giving $500 million to Ukraine in aid. It's a huge moment because without this, Ukraine was at the mercy of Russia, it appeared. And there is a hard right group in the Congress in the United States, which really doesn't want the United States to be engaging in foreign wars, supporting the likes of Zelensky, or indeed even Taiwan, one imagines. But that's a long way down the road, we hope, with Taiwan. But we're joined now to discuss what's happening on the battlefield and indeed the importance of this aid by Senator Tom Cloonan. Tom is a former Irish Army captain. He's a security analyst, and he was elected to the Senate in March 2022 in the Dublin University by-election. Good morning, Tom. This Ukraine-Russia conflict has rather dropped off the news agenda because of what's happening in Gaza with Israel's invasion and, of course, what happened on October the 7th, an appalling atrocity committed by Hamas, which saw 1,200 Israelis murdered and 253 taken as hostages. Tom, we want to talk about Ukraine. It's gone off the radar to some extent, to a large extent, really. And it appears that Russia has made significant progress. Would you agree with that assessment? Because a year ago, we were preparing for Ukraine to have some kind of almost a victory with their proposed advance. Now they're on the back foot in a big way.
Yes. So just to recap, this time last year, the talk about Ukraine was the delivery of new weapon systems, Tiger tanks, even possibly F-16 fighter jets. And there was a great deal of talk about a much vaunted summer offensive that Zelensky would launch against the Russians. And it never really materialized. And it's been very difficult for Zelensky's forces. They're fighting on a 1,000 kilometer front, 600 miles from Kherson down in the southwest, right up through Zaporizhia, Luhansk, Donetsk, and right up as far almost as Kharkiv. And so during the summer and autumn, Zelensky's forces under his former commander-in-chief, General Zaluzhny, tried probing attacks into the delta south of Kherson, in and around Bakhmut. There was continued fighting to regain ground, but they never really got the penetration that they needed. And part of the reason for that was that before the signing off of this $61 billion aid package, Ukraine hasn't received any meaningful military assistance, either weapons or ammunition, in great numbers for over a year now. So this package has been delayed by 7 months, but it's actually been over 400 days since they got any major resupply. And so the Ukrainians have been fighting over the autumn and winter on dwindling supplies of particularly artillery ammunition and tactical air defense systems. So what's happened is, while Hamas launched their genocidal attack on the Israelis on October 7th, and the world's attention lifted and shifted away to the Middle East, to Gaza, and Israel's disproportionate response and subsequent face-off with Iran, the Russians have managed, principally because of the ammunition shortages, they've managed to retake 360 square kilometers of Ukrainian territory, most recently the retaking of the town, the industrial town of Avdiivka. And at the moment, as we speak, Russian forces are encroaching on Shavyar, which is very significantly strategic towns in the Donetsk Oblast. So the Russians are concentrating all of their forces in the Donetsk region. And the fear is that they're trying to get a breakout towards the towns of Druzhkivka and Kostyantynivka. These are 7 kilometers from Shavyar, and they would lead towards the very important military strategic hubs of Kramatorsk and Slavyansk. So that seems to be the Russian axis of advance, and they're able to do it. And the reason why they're able to do it, Eamon, many of our listeners will be familiar with the so-called meat grinder attacks, where Russia, which is able to conscript 30,000 new troops, these mobiks, every month, they put them into mass human waves attacks called meat grinders. And up until the winter, the Ukrainians were able to launch mass artillery salvos on their former points, their staging areas and their start lines, inflicting massive casualties. But such has been the loss of artillery ammunition that the Ukrainians are now fighting on what is called 10% of their first line reserve. So there's a kind of a mathematical calculation of how much ammunition you need for offensive operations, which is ammunition intense, and then defensive operations. So the first line reserve would be the minimum amount of ammunition you'd need to hold an attacking force, just to suppress their attacks. And the Ukrainians are now operating on 10% of that. And they are now outgunned by Russia, which has increased its industrial production despite all of the sanctions on a war footing. The Russians outgun the Ukrainians by a margin of about 8-1 in terms of ammunition and actual heavy gun systems. So it's just simply mathematics. Somebody once said about logistics and war that the person with the most stuff in the right place at the right time wins the war.
Yes.
And in this case, the Russians have really put Zelensky's troops under pressure. And so this package will really help Ukrainian morale. And with a lot of the weapons and ammunition that have been promised and committed to Ukraine, already pre-deployed to Poland, the hope is that they'll get this stuff to the front line within the next couple of weeks. And so the next couple of weeks, Putin knows this. He will try to exploit the Ukrainian weakness as best he can in the run-up to the May the 9th Victory Day parade in Moscow. And the fear is he wants to try and get a breakthrough along that axis of advance towards Slavyansk, Kramatorsk. And this is all in Donetsk, in the northern sector.
Yes, we should point out that the funding has to pass the Senate, which is expected to do. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, said that he hoped to get it past the Senate today. And the question, there's another interesting statistic or fact in this, Tom. Only $13 billion will go to Ukraine. The rest of it is going to go to American makers of arms. And it is the same in Europe too. We'll come to Europe in a moment because the EU foreign affairs boss, Joseph Borrell, has said that Europe is going to have a sense of urgency and it too must make a bigger commitment to Ukraine's defence than they ever have before. And one of the legitimate arguments that the Americans have made is that Europe isn't doing its bit. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, so Europe is a more complex picture. So a lot of the weapons manufacturers in the United States are actually government-owned businesses,
yes,
or the government have large stakes in them, including in the research and development. So diverting billions into that military-industrial complex, which it quite literally is, allows for them to step up their production and directly supply weapons and ammunition, not just to the Ukrainians, but also to the Israelis, who have also benefited from a very significant,
yes,
aid package being green-lighted recently. In Europe, so the European Union, including its NATO member states, they spend about one-third of what the United States spends on military. But they don't have anything like one-third of the capacity, because unlike the United States, where you have one company making 155 artillery shells or one company making main battle tanks, Mike 1 Abrams tanks, in Europe you have maybe 26 member states or 25 member states making different types of weapon systems for different armies. And so the European Union for a number of years now, for some decades actually, have been trying to rationalize and make more coherent the production of aircraft, armored fighting vehicles, main battle tanks, weapon systems, to try and standardize them across the European Union to prevent replication and needless duplication and competition, to just make our spend more effective. And so in addition to that, you have this newly emerged and persistent threat from Putin. None of us would have imagined that this war would still be being fought in such a sustained and ferocious way over 2 years into the conflict. So, you know, we're now looking at the potential, if Ukraine were to fall to Russia, or if they were forced into some sort of an agreement that was disadvantageous to them, then we will have, a resurrection of the Russian front, for want of a better expression,
yes,
which would stretch from the Arctic, with Norway and Finland, now NATO member states, all the way down to the Baltic. And so that, you know, is a kind of a depressing scenario, because we all remember the 90s and the collapse of the former Soviet Union, the end of history, and a kind of a time of optimism. But we could see a return to kind of Cold War spending in terms of, you know, expenditure on weapons and ammunition, air defense systems, fighter jets, and probably a return to national service in many European states as a deterrence against Russian aggression. And whilst I believe that deterrence would be effective, I don't believe that the Russians could realistically take on the European Union, NATO member states, even without the United States. I don't think that it would be, I don't think that they could succeed in that. They could do an awful lot of damage. But it seems such a waste of money. And the Stockholm Institute for Peace Studies have published a report to say that this year, there's been an unprecedented, globally, $2,440 billion this year alone,
yes,
has been spent on military spending. And for the first time in ever, there's been an increase on all continents across the globe in military spending. And it's the highest annual jump in spending in over 60 years. So it shows that we really are at a point of kind of global instability. It's time for I think, clear heads and clear leadership. Well, going back to the Ukraine thing, one of the things I learned in just doing a bit of research into the background of this package, as I was saying earlier, General Valery Zeluzhny, he was Zelensky's commander-in-chief. And when the Russians invaded in 22, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian men and women volunteered for the military. And those hundreds of thousands, they have a strength of about 850,000 in the, just short of a million in the Ukrainian military. They have been fighting continuously now for 2 years. And before he was replaced by General Sirsky, Zeluzhny criticized the Ukrainian government's efforts to mobilize more conscripts. And so recently, President Zelensky has reduced the compulsory military service age from 27 down to 25. But he didn't sign off on an amendment that would allow Ukrainian combat troops to return home to their families after 3 years of continuous combat.
Yes.
So we have thousands, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian troops who have been in continuous combat for over 2 years now. The average age of the Ukrainian soldier in the front line is over 40.
Yes, 43, I think.
Zelensky never comments really on fatalities, but he said recently that 31,000 of those troops have been killed in action. US estimates say it's closer to 70,000 killed, with over 200,000 seriously injured. So out of that core group of 800,000 who've been fighting for 2 years, one in four have either been killed or very seriously injured. So that's going to be another factor in this. It's just endurance and how long the Ukrainian forces can keep up the fight. But they're fighting for their very existential existence.
Yes. And it's also true to say, is it not, that some Ukrainian soldiers have been fighting for 10 years because the Russians invaded, they took Crimea, and in the east they made big gains. And this began in 2014. It actually began when Barack Obama was president of the United States. So they, as a nation, have been fighting for a long, long time. Now, it is a large country, but he doesn't have, does he, Tom, the capacity that Putin has to take people off the streets and push them into the army and have conscripts that don't really know what they're doing. And in the early part of this conflict, it was Ukrainians being better fighters and better organized, wasn't it, that gave them the wherewithal to hold on. I mean, Putin thought he'd take Kiev in 4 days.
Yeah, and it was their inability to do combined arms maneuver. This is the Russians. They failed to take the airport. They failed to take the presidential palace with their special forces. And they couldn't get down from Belarus down the main highway to Kiev. And I think it's interesting that Zelensky's new commander-in-chief, Oleksandr Sirsky, he was the general who spearheaded the very rapid kind of lightning advances in Kharkiv in the autumn of 2022 that liberated a great deal of the Kharkiv Oblast right up to the Russian border in the northeastern part of Ukraine. So he was a general who was appointed, who is known for his kind of fighting initiative. And part of the challenge for Zelensky, in addition to this core group of combat soldiers who've been in the line for over 2 years now in high intensity combat operations, is just the sheer length of their front.
Yes.
It's 1,000 kilometers. And as the invading and as the attacker, Putin has had, though his generals haven't really shown much of it, they've had the initiative. They can take the initiative as they are now in the Donetsk Oblast. But I think watch this space with a renewed, I suppose, morale, impetus and motivation to fight. And with this new aid, and particularly if they get F-16 jets, I'm not talking about wonder weapons or anything like that, but simply being able to regain control of the airspace.
Yes.
in eastern Ukraine. I would watch very closely now to see if Ukraine mount a dramatic spring offensive of some sort, to force the Russians to respond and withdraw their forces from their preferred center of gravity. But I do think that this, you know, the solution to this conflict will be about maneuver. It'll be about, you know, taking the initiative, which Alexander Sirsky has shown he has the command kind of skills to do that. But this kind of meat grinder, you know, war of attrition, this incremental taking, you know, 360 square kilometers in 3 or 4 months with huge losses. I don't think that's going to win the war for Putin and the timescale that he wants. But it has been like the Russians, though, have shown their capacity. The Russian military authorities, his generals, they have shown the capacity to learn on the battlefield, and they have had some fairly significant innovations over the winter, including this new phenomenon of glide bombs. These are heavy munitions that are launched from aircraft that are able to pinpoint very heavily defended Ukrainian bunkers and fortified defense lines in that Donetsk area up towards Kramatorsk and Slavyansk. So because the Ukrainians have lost their vital supplies of ammunition for tactical air defense systems, the Russian Air Force, which thus far in this war really haven't played a critical role, they've been able to assert something of air superiority in eastern Ukraine. And so they're able to fly in and launch these, what they call joint direct attack munitions, or JDAMs, or glide bombs. And these are thousands and thousands of old Soviet era, really heavy bombs that have had a GPS kit and a kind of a, for want of a better expression, a glider attachment attached to them. So they get into Ukrainian airspace, and at a safe distance, they launch these bombs, and they are GPS or GLONASS, which is the Russian version of GPS, GLONASS guided right onto Ukrainian targets. And some of these bombs, like the FAB 3000 or the FAB 1500, they contain up to 3 tons of high explosives. So this is a new thing now. So in addition to human wave assaults on Ukrainian positions, they've also had these pinpoint glide bomb strikes on their position, their frontline positions, that, you know, when you have 300 tons of high explosives, explosives, anti-personnel, anti-tank hitting a target, you know, all you're left with is a crater, maybe 200 or 300 meters wide. And, you know, they're devastating weapons. And the Russians are now launching approximately 20 of these attacks per day. And because they enjoy air superiority, because they've evolved their kind of electronic countermeasures, jamming Ukrainian drones and defeating Ukrainian drone jamming electronic equipment, they've been able to get lots of reconnaissance drones into and over Ukrainian positions to pinpoint these defensive positions and get this level of accuracy in their targets. So as a priority, when this aid reaches the Ukrainians, one of the things they're going to have to do is push back on that Russian air control, which they have been doing, and they have been shooting down Russian aircraft in greater numbers in recent weeks, you know, in these desperate circumstances. Allied to that, using their air force to strike targets on the front lines, the Russians have also stepped up their attacks on Ukrainian cities like Lviv, Kharkiv, Dnipro. And again, they're exploiting the lack of ammunition for the Patriot anti-missile systems. And that's why they've been able to hit the energy system and their electricity grid. And those attacks represent war crimes. Absolutely. Targeting of civilians and civilian infrastructure, apartment blocks. So this is the point that Zelensky and the Ukrainians have found themselves in after 7 months of delays on greenlighting this aid package, and after over a year of getting any really meaningful support and aid. But the Europeans are promising them, the Germans have promised them another Patriot missile system. The Netherlands are seeking to purchase Patriot missile systems from anywhere they can get them, and committing to send at least 5 to Ukraine. It's a thoroughly depressing scenario, but Putin has to be stopped. And the only place Putin will stop is where Ukraine stop him. And they're paying the price here in terms of those deaths and injuries and damage. It's an appalling scenario.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Let me ask you a question, Tom, that is, it seems to me, inevitable that we're going to have to face, Europe is going to have to face, that the EU, in the face of a growing sense that the United States may become isolationist, for example, under a Trump presidency, or sometime in the not-too-distant future, because that is the trend. I wonder if you'd agree that that is the trend. Europe will have to, and Ireland is part of this, it will have to have the means to defend itself, won't it?
Yeah,
our neutrality comes into that.
Yeah, so I think my least catastrophic, I mean, my kids call me Captain Catastrophe because I have a tendency to catastrophize. My least, and it's a depressing scenario, but I think we will see a return to Cold War spending on defense and military spending within the European Union and amongst our European member states who are members of NATO. And you can see that happening already. Germany has dramatically increased its military spending. And this is what Trump criticized during his presidency.
Rightly, we weren't spending, you're obliged as a member of NATO, just I said this for the benefit of our listeners, I know you know it, 2% of your GDP you must spend and give that to NATO and make that commitment. And Germany, for example, which was the wealthiest country in Europe, wasn't given anything under Angela Merkel, which is why Trump was able to call her out.
Yeah, and the European expenditure, the member states who are members of NATO have all collectively increased their spend. And the other member states are, you know, also keeping in step with that. Austria is looking at its defense and it's what they call their engaged neutrality to make sure that they're self-reliant and that they're meaningfully engaged with the EU sort of collective agreements and with NATO standard agreements or STANAGs in relation to air defense, intelligence, the air, maritime, ground, and cyber realms. So Europe is increasing its spending, it's arming itself, it's manufacturing, trying to rationalize the manufacturing of weapons and equipment. And, you know, that is, unfortunately, the response that has been triggered by Putin's criminal action. I think Europe would be able to stand on its own if the United States became completely isolationist. I don't think that will happen. I think the transatlantic relationship remains strong, even under a Trump presidency. But for Ireland, we have to have I think that Ireland's neutrality should remain a central and critical component of our foreign policy perspective. We should be a strong voice for peace in the world, particularly as the world becomes increasingly destabilized. But in order to do that, we have to be self-reliant. We can't have the RAF patrolling our airspace. Yes. We have to invest properly in our own defenses, in our own security, in our own intelligence, and even in our own policing. We have to invest, take those things seriously, and be able to look after our own cyber, maritime, air, and ground domain. Because, you know, at the moment, six of our counties are in NATO. I don't know what the situation is going to be on this island in 10 or 15 years' time, but the administration of justice, defence, security, intelligence, that will all have to be completely overhauled and invested in and acceptable to everybody on the island and fit for purpose, because we can't call ourselves a sovereign neutral state if we can't defend ourselves, if we can't see into our airspace, if we can't protect our maritime, the natural environment and all of the, you know, subsea oceanic cables that need protection. Our future wind farms are supposed to be the Saudi Arabia of wind off the West Coast in the next couple of years. So these are issues that we have to address in order to vindicate our sovereign status and to vindicate our neutral position.
Okay, Tom, as always, it's great to talk to you. We're very grateful. Tom Clonan, Senator Tom Clonan, is security analyst, author, and somebody who was posted to the Lebanon, part of UNIFIL, and also a whistleblower who did some fantastic work about abuse of people in the Irish Army. We're grateful to Tom Clonan, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.